Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at personal computers and software and technology and what's rising and what's fading away and what might be obsolete. After 2016, Peter Green with us. He's an independent computer consultant for Infostar.com. Joins us pretty often to talk about technology and answer your personal computer questions. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show, or email us at talk@WPR.org. And Pete, great to have you back.
Always fun, Larry.
Well, let's start out with dying technologies. What don't we care about anymore? What's going away?
You know, we could reminisce and talk about the phonograph, but we're not going to go that far back.
Actually, that's come back, though.
Yeah, I still have my vinyl. I've been asked to get rid of it for a long time, but I still have my vinyl. But, you know, if you think of some of the things around us that have occurred over the last, 20 years, you know, you can see things that have faded out. I mean, bag phone, who has a bag phone now? But, there are a number of us who can go back and remember that. Things like the fax machine. Faxes are not as commonplace as they used to be. Even your iPod, a lot of people have enough storage on their phones that, it's become the one device for them. Landlines, people...
Don't
have a landline, using your cell phone. With Netflix, their evolution towards the internet, DVDs, Blockbuster, where are they? So if you look around you, things that you use today, how long will they really be with us? Windows XP, replaced by 7, now Windows 10. I know my experience in Mexico was that they were still using Windows XP, but I don't expect that to be around much longer in terms of, people and companies actually using that. But, some other things to think about the world around you and how we communicate, where we, have different dialects, we have different languages, and then think about driving on an interstate, a superhighway where we go really fast and we really pay attention to each other, because if you're not, that's where we have accidents. And that's not good because, problems happen. So if you look at the internet as, and people call it the super information highway, there are ways to use the technology that's available to us to do things so we communicate better. That's really what it's all about. So when you think of things like the fax machine, do we really fax by the internet or via the internet? Well, you can, but do you really have to? People scan things in and then they attach it to an email, or they may receive a document and you can attach a document, but let's say you've got a group of people you got to share information with and you don't really want to just like email everybody, or you've got a class situation where you're communicating with your students, you can use something called Dropbox, which we've talked about on the air before. But that's a technology that's available to individuals, teachers, businesses, and so forth. And it's really to make things easier.
Yeah, and it does.
And it's taking that extra effort to just see what that's about and how you might be able to use it that can not only make things easier for you, but communicating with other people. So when you get stuff from companies that you do business with, or you're trying to buy or sell, if you need to share information, look at the technologies that are available to you today online at no cost to see how they might make things easier for not only you, but for the people you're trying to communicate with. Because it's really about not just yourself, it's about others. So there's, for example, making a deposit at a bank. You get it in the mail. Oh, I got to run off to the bank. Do you?
No.
How can you do that? If you don't, you've got a physical check.
Oh, a physical check.
You got a check. How are you going to get it to the bank?
Yeah.
You can use your phone. With, I'm not saying every bank has this available. The one I happen to bank with has mobile deposit. You take a picture of the front of the check and the back of the check. You make a deposit, and it gets done, just like as if you drove up and handed the physical pieces of paper, the check and the slip, to the teller. So the technology is out there to make your life easier, and it's all about communicating. So I'm just saying there are dying technologies, and the reason some of these things are dying is because there are better ways to do what they were meant to do for us.
And then there are some that, obviously many that are changing rapidly that may not die, that probably aren't going to die out, but they're going to change significantly.
They'll evolve over time and improve.
Fitbit is an example, I think, of a technology that's evolving and, and getting better.
Right.
And there are many others out there as well.
Yep.
Well, we have Armando in Galena, Illinois, with a question for you. So let's find out what's on Armando's mind. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. Hi. How are you doing, Larry? I haven't talked to you for a long time. I have a couple of questions, but the first one is that I used to have an old XP computer that somehow became very unstable, and all my emails are there under Outlook Express. And, you know, we are talking about Outlook Express has been there for many, many years. So I have emails from 2002. And then now, how can I retrieve those emails to put them on my new computer that has Windows, you know, the latest one, Windows 10?
Right.
So is there any way to retrieve those emails from Outlook Express?
Well, if you can still use that computer, you can actually export out the emails. If you can't still use the computer, but the drive is still usable, you could hook it up to a drive kit that would allow you to hook it up externally to the new computer.
Yes.
And then you could work with, you know, if you were going to use like Outlook on the new computer or Windows Live Mail, you could grab those files from your old computer and pull them in from that hard drive that you've attached to the new one. So
I was able to access the files of the Outlook Express, you know, where they have the inbox, you know, the sent and inbox.
Right.
And then the emails are, you know, large files because they were there for a long time.
Right.
Is there any way I can read them, you know, put them on a small drive and then put them in my new computer and then have something to read them? Because they are, I think the ending of the file is DBX or something like that.
Right. Well, what Windows Live Mail and Outlook do is they basically they translate it into their format to be able to read it. So it's a matter of, you know, just exporting out from the old system and pulling it into the new system. And you can pull in all your folders that you have for all your old email. So
and then go to Windows Live or Outlook Express and ask them to read those files.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they should read.
Right. So if you still have the computer active, you know, the Windows XP that's become unstable, but maybe you can still use it.
You can
use Outlook Express, and I believe the top left, it'll say File. And then one of the options is to export. I think it might even say Export and Import. And if you hit Export, then it'll start giving you choices of what you want to do with your data files, with your email.
So you can just select those emails and go from there?
You just have to keep making choices.
Yeah.
You know, where you want to save them, what you want to call them, how many you want to choose. You know, do you want to select all the boxes or, you know, just certain ones?
I have another very fast question. I have two dogs, and then they run away. I live in the countryside, and then I got a little box that I attached to my dogs in his collar. And of course, with these programs about training, I can see how far they went, you know, and then just in the maps. Mm-hmm. But is there any way that with another phone I can find out where they are now? If they have a cell phone, it means that if they have a phone on their collar.
Right.
Is there a way I can find out exactly where they are so I can go and pick them up?
Well, I think that depends on, you know, with the products that you're using, you should probably contact the manufacturer. There might be an app that you can put on your phone that uses, you know, locating technology to do that.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're not the first or the last person to ask that question. The unfortunate thing is maybe what you've invested in may not have that capability, but I'm sure there's a company out there that has that feature. Because I know I've seen on shows like Shark Tank where, you know, companies have added that kind of technology to suitcases so that, you know, if they lose their luggage, they know yeah. exactly where it is.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Armando. Good to hear your voice
Good
again.
Questions.
Been a while. Yeah, thank you. Oh, Bob in Minocqua up next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a Windows 7 user, and I'm happy with the system, and I've been dragging my feet because of that, switching to Windows 10. And looking at tutorials on the Internet, on YouTube, I saw a site that was called Classic Shell, which mm-hmm. said I could load this onto my computer, and I could configure my startup screen on Windows 10 to look like Windows 7. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if this is dangerous or safe?
No, it works.
No, it's actually been available since Windows 8 came out, because when Windows 8 came out, they basically said, hey, we want you to conform to the way we do things. And then 8.1 fixed that. Windows 10, I've been using it for several months, and I've converted a lot of our workstations to it at work. It's stable. It works well. There are some things that don't really agree as to why they did them the way they did. But, you know, the Classic Shell product, it does work. The Windows 10 interface is kind of a meld between, I'd say, Windows 7 and Windows 8. It's more stable with memory and you know, with web browsers and things like that. And there's the new Microsoft Edge for their browser. But you actually still have accessibility to Internet Explorer 11 because they've also realized that not everything that they do with Edge works, and people still need 11. So at least they've been kind to us and acknowledge that.
There you go.
So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And Tim in Elkhorn. Hi, thank you for calling.
You betcha. Good morning.
Morning.
I installed Windows 10 about 2 months ago, and it's working fairly well if you discount the fact that you can't find things like you used to be able to on the old XP, or Windows 7, rather. But the problem I'm having is the printer being talked to by the computer. When I press print to print something, it takes about a minute or so for the preview screen to come up, which you can't adjust like you used to either. Yeah. But it takes up to 5 minutes after you actually print the or press the last print button for the printer to actually kick in and start printing the material. This doesn't seem right to me.
No, I've encountered some printer issues with Windows 10. Sometimes it defaults to there's the system, an XPS printer, which I have no idea why it does that, but I've seen that happen. But have you downloaded or looked for a latest updated printer driver from the manufacturer?
Yes, I have, and I've installed something, but I'm not sure, to be perfectly frank, what I was installing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit leery of some of those things because they also, you know, put add-ons onto your computers, mm-hmm. sometimes like new toolbars and all that sort of thing. So I'm not really sure what I'm doing.
You might want to communicate with the printer manufacturer and you know, tell them your experience with it and see what they might recommend. They may have a setting change for you in printer management. So, you know, it's really Windows trying to talk to the printer, and they leave it up to the printer manufacturer to do their homework, and they also rely on feedback from users if there are issues. You know, they don't know mm-hmm. about them until they hear about them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important to let them know.
There you go, Tim. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
You know, he mentioned a good point. There are things that when you try to look for them in Windows 10 that they aren't where you expect them to be, and then they put them in a place that requires an extra click or two, and it's kind of like, why did they do that?
You know, Alan Kakana wondered, and here's something for you to ponder for a minute. And you've addressed this to some extent, but he's wondering, should he upgrade from 7 to 10? We'll think about that for a second. And I will remind you that you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Breanne Sheschel, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Right now, taking a look at your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. And let's...
You know, Larry, you asked that question.
Yeah.
You know, Windows 7, Windows 10.
Yeah.
So what I did was, I was the guinea pig for where I work. And I tested it for a number of months to see, you know, compatibility issues and what other things I was going to be dealing with, because then I would have to upgrade other people mm-hmm. and deal with their issues and problems, and I wanted to know yep. what I was getting myself into. So in that regard, you can do... Microsoft has an app software that allows you to see, you know, what programs you might have issues with. So you can kind of do like a pretest and see what you might be confronted with. The other thing is to do your due diligence, do your research, go online. And if you're using programs that are not commonplace, like Microsoft Office, QuickBooks, for example, Log Me In, I believe, with remote support technology where you can dial in and use your computer at the office. Log Me In is very popular for that. They had issues with Windows 10 when it came out, so they weren't ready, you know, right out of the get-go. So if you were doing telecomputing work and using something like Log Me In, you had to revert your system back because it wasn't ready for it. So, you know, what are you using your system for? What kind of software? Go online, do some research, and, you know, ask the questions, you know, the software that you're using, how does it work with Windows 10? Good, bad, you know, and see what's out there, because I'm sure there are other people ahead of you.
Yeah, for sure. Tom in Hixton has something for us. Tom, hi.
Morning, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got an older HP laptop with Windows XP Professional on it, and at one time I was using it to stream Netflix, and I had the computer plugged into a TV, and anyway, it developed what it's calling a hub port overload, and there's a little window that comes up that indicates that, and if you click on the window, it allows you to reset that port. However, it doesn't, you know, within seconds, the little window pops up again. So how can one resolve that?
So what is the computer hooked up to? What kind of, are you using like a router switch?
No, right now, I mean, I don't stream Netflix anymore. So,
okay.
You know, that's just something that I used to do with it. Right now, it's just hooked up on a Wi-Fi system at home.
Okay.
Well, there are changes you can make to the network, or they call it the NIC, network interface, Ethernet card, Wi-Fi. They're all interfaces, and that's where you're receiving, you know, the internet stream from. You can make adjustments to that adapter, but how I would probably look at trying to solve the problem, if it's saying that you're getting a hub port, you know, overload, is, and Netflix, is to identify what kind of Wi-Fi adapter or how you're hooked up to the internet with your computer that you're bringing in the Netflix in, and changes that could be made to fix the hub port overload, because you can make some subtle changes to the adapter itself, but they have to be made, you know, with specific details. So sometimes simple things of enabling or disabling a feature on a card can be important, or changing the packet size in which something is received or sent by, because it's handshaking. You know, it's talking to you. It's talking back to their server. And there are parameters that are passed back and forth. So you can, it can be on auto, but maybe auto is not the proper setting in the case of your computer because you said you're using Windows XP. And I know from working with Windows XP, you can actually fine-tune those network adapter settings. And I've had to do that a lot of times so that the network, how it would work between our servers and our workstations mm-hmm. would be faster because there was a bottleneck. So you can make those fine-tuned changes, but you need to know specifically, you know, what adapter you're working with, your Wi-Fi or your hardwired and Netflix and see what you find out there. Because again, you're not the only one that's probably seen that issue. It's just you need to, you know, be more specific for the equipment that you're using.
Yeah, but I just so you understand, I'm no longer, I mean, this thing keeps popping up, mm-hmm. Not having streamed anything off the internet for quite some time, including Netflix. So it occurred while I was doing that with Netflix, but now it won't go away.
Then I would just eliminate the search of Netflix and just see if there's a way for, because again, you said you're using Windows XP, right?
Yeah,
because you can make specific changes as related to XP for that purpose. So for example, I believe Broadcom is usually the Wi-Fi adapter. There are sometimes when you look in Windows XP and networking, there it says change adapter settings. You can click on change adapter settings and you can get into the properties. And then there's a specific list of items that you can actually make changes to. And I've actually had to do that to improve how the network speed reacts between the server and the PC or the workstation that you're using, because there are communication issues. You're seeing a specific error, which sounds like hub port overload, which has to do with speed and, you know, the amount of, you know, information that's being shared between devices.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate your call. You can join in as well with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Denny in Eagle River has a question.
Yeah, I've got, well, I work on a Mac, but I bought the Nokia phone because it had the best camera. And since I upgraded to El Capitan, I can no longer upload my images. For a while, I was able to download somebody's patch. But every time I downloaded it to upload images, I would have to restart my computer, and then it would work. Well, the last time, that didn't work at all. And I use these images for my job. So I'm wondering, has Mac or Windows or whoever the problem is fixed this yet?
When I hear the upgrade to El Capitan, I would probably
downgrade.
Well,
if I could downgrade, I would.
Yeah, you probably need to communicate with Apple online, or you know, I don't know if you're located near Madison,
Eagle River,
or Eagle River. They might have. Yeah, that's. I don't know where the
you're
closest
not close
Apple
to any
location
place.
Is. Yeah.
Well, we have a Mac store, a Happy Mac store in Wausau, and I actually have an appointment with them for next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess the answer is to try to back up or go backwards in my operating system.
That's a case of, you know, the upgrade that I talked about, Windows. It's the same thing for Apple. We haven't upgraded to that latest upgrade for issues that we just had heard early about, that there were some concerns, and we just were taking a wait and see, you know, attitude in terms of doing an upgrade on the Mac, because it just, when you got to mess with that stuff, it's never pretty, and I don't like staying up late at night and early into the morning if you know, from a business perspective, dealing with it. So you made the right choice to, you know, visit with someone that can take a good look at that and see what your options are.
Yeah. Wish we could be more helpful on that one, but that's...
You know, unless they have a fix for it, if it was something that the operating system was supporting before and now you're having issues with it, it goes back to, you know, the manufacturer of the operating system.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good luck in Wausau.
I wish I could point you to, you know, a place that could, you know, start putting the screws to Apple and Windows and Microsoft, you know, for doing those kind of things, because it's not right.
No.
You know, just...
No, it's a pain.
Yep.
Thanks, Denny. Pat in Duluth, Minnesota. On to you now. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking this call.
Sure.
I have a MacBook 4.1, and the operating system is OS X 10.5.8. So I know it's old. It's maybe like 7 or 8 years old. But the problem I'm having is that the Safari browser is no longer supported
Right.
And it told me to upgrade, and I've tried to do that twice, and I had help at a coffee shop with a young person, and it wouldn't upgrade. Then someone told me I could do Foxfire, and I tried to do that, and it still wouldn't upgrade. And so I'm not sure, can I take this to a shop and have them do that? And the reason is because I'm in need of opening some websites or just some like links, and I can't do that now, I think, because of this browser.
Mm-hmm. Well, what Apple chose to do is they pick a cutoff point where they say, you know, we're done supporting the hardware that you have. I have a system like that, so you're basically stopped in time for, you know, adding any other upgrades to that computer in terms of how it interacts with the operating system. So something like Safari, Firefox. Firefox is usually pretty independent, but I'm not ruling it out that maybe you can't do that update. But the OS X on your system cannot be updated. So Safari is an Apple product. It's Apple software. And whatever version you're trying to download now is not going to work on the OS X because they're not supporting that, the two of them together. So in terms of the websites that you're trying to view, if they're using any of the latest and greatest add-ons that were enabled in Safari, you know, in a system that you sat down that was brand new, and it had the latest version of Safari on it, and there happened to be some add-ons that were turned on, allow you to see the website, but on your computer you can't see it. The only way to get around that is to see if you could download maybe, you know, you have to do some research, maybe find out if there's a version of Firefox out there that you can download that would work for you, or Google Chrome. I think Opera is still around. And see if you can download those and if those web links would work for you. But unfortunately, with the hardware that you have, Apple's not going to allow you to upgrade Safari or the OS X.
Okay. Like, I used to get emails to upgrade different things, but those emails stopped, like, a few years ago. Is that what they do? They just stop?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
If I brought this to a computer store, would they be able to help, do you think, or no?
No, it's you're fixed in time with the hardware. There's nothing that they can do to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm a real dinosaur.
it's about a 5-year window plus.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit longer, but not. Not much in Apple's eyes.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that. Yep. I'm sad to hear it, but now I know what the issue is here.
Yeah, they use the term sunsetting when they're basically saying we're done supporting a version of a product. They sunset it, you know, Apple's done it, Microsoft has done it. We've announced dates on for various version of Windows. IBM has done it with different things that they have. All of them do. Yeah. Printer manufacturers, look at all the toner cartridges that you look at when you walk through a store that sells toner cartridges. You go, oh my God. You know, and it's along with oil filters for cars and all that stuff.
Everything.
So, everything.
So yeah. It's an expensive little reshuffle.
It still works. Yeah. It still works. It just doesn't work, you know, that little extra thing that you want and need.
Yeah.
So then,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating. Yep. It's just frustrating. Yep. Okay, well, many, many thanks.
All right, Pat. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It may be time to consider, if you really need it, it may be time to consider a new computer.
It happens.
It happens. It happens. Sharon in Belmont. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
We just got into Windows 10 in December, and in January I did a dumb thing. I tried to tried to clean up the internet because I was having trouble with something, and I lost Windows Edge and I lost the start window, and I can't get them back. I've worked at it, and I just can't get them back. So I wondered if you could tell me how to do that.
let's see. That's how did you manage to remove the start and edge?
To clean up the internet, clean up my hard drive, and it cleaned it up all right. It took those two things away from me.
Oh.
How long has it been like that?
Oh, 3-4 weeks.
Hmm.
Worked at it to try to get them to come back, but they won't.
You know, I haven't done a I don't think I've done a restore on a Windows 10 machine, but you should be able to. You might be able to go back and pick a restore point, which would go back prior to the date that happened.
Okay.
So that's one option.
Yeah.
The other thing, and you know, I was going to tell you to try and run a utility where it would compare, you know, the operating system files and see if they're intact, but it wouldn't fix the problem that you have right now. So
the best bet is the restore.
Yeah.
I think.
So what I would do is you have access to the internet, right?
Yes.
Okay. I would. What browser are you using? Since you said you removed Edge or the link to Edge, but you can still get to it.
No, we can't use it at all.
Mm-hmm.
We use Google.
Okay. What I would do is just do research or search on Windows 10 Restore, and it'll give you step by step on how to, you know, search for the restore point prior to the date that you did what you did, and try that. That's the way I would approach that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. And that's, you'll get pretty much step by step instructions.
Yeah. There's YouTube videos out there. There's people that have posted pages. What I find kind of odd is the ability to actually take out the start button and and the browser, you know, in terms of cleaning. Most of the utilities out there, like CCleaner, when you're looking at a system in terms of performance and speed and issues, I went to CCleaner because my fiance said, hey, this new computer we got is really running slow. It's pretty ugly. And I watched it, and I was like, yeah, that's not right. So I went down, and I hadn't, you know, I had set it up for her, so I went and downloaded CCleaner. And I went to piriforms.com, which is their website, and they have over 1 billion downloads, Larry. That's what they state. A billion downloads.
Oh.
Now, I said to her, I'm responsible for hundreds of them. I said, I know. I mean, personally, I've done it, you know, hundreds of times on all the different systems I've worked on. Maybe 1,000, and maybe through radio, you know. Maybe I'm responsible for millions. I'm not going to say, but when you see the word billions and downloads, I'm like, oh, my God, wow. So, you know, for everyone listening out there, and if you could share this, there are utilities, and I'm not endorsing it. I'm just saying there are other utilities out there. There's, I think, Glary is another one. But people have done wonderful jobs in terms of programming these utilities, these apps that we talk about. And, you know, they're not perfect. But I'm saying, you know, and maybe you might be the one out of 100, but you can create restore points when you're doing this stuff so that before you even install the software, if you need to go back, you can go back to where you were. But when you run something like CCleaner, it cleans out all these unnecessary files that your operating system creates. It cleans out the registry so that it's efficient. And when I ran that, and then Kelly brought the system back up, she goes, oh, wow, that works a lot better.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I see someone that does some work to clean their computer or fix their computer because of speed or whatever, and they take out the start and they take out other things, those programs don't do that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's not their normal call of, you know, use to do stuff like that. So I'm just, you know, putting that out there that just, you know, there are utilities to make your systems work better, and there's nothing wrong with doing some research, finding them. CCleaner is very popular, and, you know, download it and test it, and you can create restore points. So if you don't like it, you can remove it, and you can go back to the way you were before.
Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Peter Green, computer consultant with InfoStar.com, visits with us pretty regularly to help with your personal computer issues. Join in, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's turn to Judy in Milwaukee next. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for taking my call. So I have a HP laptop that's 3 years old. And last year, there's a fan on the back side of the laptop that runs frequently. And so when I'm typing an email, this fan will start running in, and then it just stops. I can't, you know, it won't type anymore. And then the fan will stop, and then I can type it again. So that's one of the problems. frequently, I get this dialog box that pops up that has something to do with a script. And so I can either select debug or stop the script. I always hit stop the script, but it comes up frequently. And then in my, I have Google Gmail. When I first open it, a lot of times on the left-hand side, it says something's not right. We're having trouble connecting to Google. We'll keep trying. So those are my issues.
Okay. Have you done any upgrading to the operating system at all with your laptop?
What kind of upgrading do you mean?
What version of Windows are you using on it?
Oh, I have Windows 8. That's what it was on when I purchased it.
Okay.
And frequently, every once in a while, I'll get a message, do you want to upgrade? And so I did it the first time, and it just kind of locked up the whole computer. I couldn't use it for, I don't know, a day or so. Mm-hmm. So since then, I haven't, you know, it comes back and asks me that again. And I haven't done, I just say, you know, later.
Okay. Yeah, some of those updates that it's wanting to put on your system might actually be playing a role in what you're experiencing with Google. Which web browser are you using? Do you know? When you access your Gmail, are you using Internet
Firefox?
Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Have you done it? Have you done any updatings to Firefox?
I think I have. Yeah, I think I have over the time I had it.
Okay.
I can't recall anything recently.
Okay. Yeah, you might want to make sure that that's updated.
Okay.
And then you could, have you ever tried or downloaded Google Chrome?
No, I haven't.
Mm-mm. Okay.
I mean, I've thought about it, but.
Yep. Google Chrome is another browser. You might want to try and download that and see if you're still experiencing the same problems with Google Gmail. Google Chrome makes Google Gmail, so they support each other well.
What does that dialog box that pops up frequently?
It's a script. It's trying to run a script, and it's related to the browser, and that's why I talk about update. Having things updated, because it might have to do with whether or not your browser is updated and current and can support what it's trying to run.
Okay. All right.
All right. In terms of the fan turning on, usually that's when the CPU is being taxed or trying to do something that it's struggling to get through. The fan turns on to cool the system to prevent it from overheating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You said it's 3 years.
It runs so frequently.
couple of things. One is when you use the laptop, are you usually using it at like a table, or are you like maybe sitting in bed reclining and having it?
I have it on the desk.
Okay. Have you, sometimes laptops don't have the best cooling, they've gotten better, but sometimes you can maybe raise it up off of the table and see if
I do that. I put a pen underneath it so that there's some space between them.
All right, that's good.
Yeah.
Another thing is when it's off is to maybe inspect it and see if it looks like there's a lot of lint or dust on the fan. And what you can do is when it's off, you can get like a compressed air and blow on that to clean that out. Especially after 3 years, that might help. But usually the fan turns on when it's being taxed or asked to do, to do stuff. Do you know how much memory you have in the laptop? By any chance, how much RAM?
Unfortunately, I don't. I'm not that computer savvy.
Well, what you may want to take a look at is, because extra memory will help, is to see, take a look at the model of your computer, and you could go to a site like Crucial.com or Kingston.com or just Google search it or go to the manufacturer for your laptop, what you said was HP, and see the specs on it and how much memory you can maybe expand to. And you could also look at the properties of your computer in Windows, and it'll tell you how much memory you have in your system that's right in front of you.
You can find that right out.
Yeah, and sometimes you can double it, and that might actually help improve the speed and the fan not going on as much.
Okay.
All right.
You were talking about sea cleaner?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You think that's something that could help?
Sure. That would be a good option for you to...
How do I find that?
You can Google search it. It's C, and then C-L-E-A-N-E-R.
So two C's to start.
Yep.
Okay.
And the company is called Piriforms, PIRIFORMS.com, I believe is their website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
All right. Good luck.
It's a free download. They have ones that you can pay for, but there is one that's free that works quite well.
Good luck, Judy. Thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Tom in Watertown, we are to you now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I use Microsoft Picture Manager for my business, and I'm in the middle of a busy season. I had my laptop reformatted, and I put Office 365 on it. Picture Manager does not come on Office anymore, but I still have my old Office 2007 or 2013 disk.
Okay.
Can I selectively take Picture Manager off of the disk and install it?
That's a good question. You might be able to. I've never personally done that. You might want to do a little research on that online. Another option is to use something like Google's Picasa to do some, you know, picture management.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if you've taken a look at that, but that's, you know, freely available for you to use as well.
Yeah, I'm being a little stubborn wanting to stay with picture.
Yeah. There might be a way to extract it out of there. I just personally have never tried that because I always thought, you know, hey, it's always there. I don't personally use it a lot, but I've always assumed, hey, it's there.
Right. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
I know I've extracted Microsoft programs off of disks, but there's a specific way to do that, and I don't know the exact instructions to do that, but the only way to find out is to research it and see if you can.
Yeah. Good luck, Tom. Thanks. Jeff in Beloit, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, Larry. I wanted to thank you for having the show. And then my question is about cell phone security. I use my phone occasionally to make purchases over the internet.
Mm-hmm. What kind of phone are you using? Are you using an iPhone or is it an Android?
Yeah, it's an Android.
Yeah. I actually run two of them on mine. You can go to their app store. They have AVG and Avast both make antivirus programs for the Android phone. And they're free. They have free versions.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that sounds good. Well, thanks very much, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you for calling.
Good luck.
And I would
highly recommend that too, because we've talked about this before, and I don't know if a lot of people realize this. Apple makes the iOS for the iPhone. So just like the Mac environment, and we've talked about this for years, it's more secure than a Windows environment. Where did Android come from? Android was an open operating system. Google acquired that. They own that, but it still has a lot of holes in it. So having something help you is a good thing.
Carrie in Ashland, thanks for calling. Carrie, are you there? Oh, must have lost her. Michael emailed, he can't figure out how to successfully move photos from his Samsung smartphone to iPhoto. We talked a little bit about that before. His phone is a Galaxy S4 with Android 5.0.1.
They make a utility where, you know, you use your cable to hook it up to the Mac, and then there's a Samsung utility you have to download that allows you to talk to the Mac, and then you can copy files between the two.
So it's as simple as that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Well, that seems easy enough.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah. Adam in Beaver Dam, hi.
Yeah, hi, guys. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I got some extra tax return money this season, and I'm thinking I want to build a PC for the first time, expressly for the use of video games, mostly.
Okay.
And I just have no idea where to start. Is there any good website that you'd recommend to kind of start looking at how someone can start building their own computer?
Okay. Well, I can tell you from experience that I used to build computers, and now I just go online and do some research and, you can buy a separate system board, you can buy a separate case, buy a power supply, or you can just let somebody put that all together for you so that you don't have shorts and you don't wonder why it's not working or not coming up. I've bought stuff from Tiger, from Newegg, are great places to research a lot of different options They have a lot of different products available. eBay is also another really good place of finding, you know, pre-built and tested gaming systems. And you can get some great deals on in keeping the cost down that way as well. There are gaming websites out there that will tell you about, you know, the good and bad about video cards. And there are also some just really good sites that review products. So a company called CNET, CNET.com, we've talked about many, many times, does a lot of reviews of different products out there. Newegg and Newegg.com, TigerDirect.com. Those websites cater to people that, you know, build their own systems as well as just, you know, for business use. So you'll find a lot of different options there. CPU Benchmark, I've got a website linked to that off of my top 10 somewhere, but CPU Benchmark will allow you to look at the CPUs and how fast they are.
So there you go. Yeah, very important. Thank you so much for calling. Peter Green, our guest today. Pete is a computer consultant with Infostar.com and talks with us regularly about your computer problems. Call in 1-800-642-1234. We'll be back with Pete right after this look at the news. You stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at computers today. Your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. He comes by every so often to talk with us. He's been doing it for years and years and years, and we always have a great time. Join in. The lines are all filled right now. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And this time of the program, we always have Pete's top 10 websites, and you've got some good ones, one relating to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I always try to do stuff that's, you know,
current,
what's going on. So if you go to Infostar.com, the top left, you can either go to the top 10 archives and scroll down to today's date or hit the current top 10, and they're all there. The first one is SuperBowlCommercials.tv. So there's one without the .com. And it's the 50th year, so there's a lot there. Just you can look at all the commercials, past, present. Some of them are, you know,
classics.
Very, very classics and creative. Number two is for Major League Baseball coming up, because it's February today, and we get spring training coming up. Well, spring training online.com is a good resource if you're interested in grapefruit and cactus league stuff. It's all there. And then NHL deadline, we just got past the All-Star game, so we're going to have a trade deadline. So it's NHLTradeTracker.com, and that's the history of trades.
Mm-hmm.
That's always cool to follow that. FIFO, F-E-E-F-O.com, is a fee-based service that allows feedback from consumers to merchants. So if you're familiar with eBay, it's, you know, important feedback between buyers and sellers. FIFO is a way that companies can use that for working with their customers. Findthecompany.com is number five. So if you're interested in information about public and private companies, you can do searches there for that information. Number six, findthehome.com. Over 100 million for sale on and off market homes. Information is up there. If you're into optometry, which is about the eyes, there's optometricmanagement.com is an online management resource for optometry. Number eight is a real popular oldie but goodie that's from my industry called infoworld.com, and they have a great resource library that you have access to. And you can look for the latest news, info, reviews, and analyses out there in the IT world. Number nine, if you're shopping for stuff online, a great place to start is frugal.com, which is a Google shopping search engine. So if you're looking for alternative places to find information, what I particularly find useful is when I'm trying to find information about a product, if you use Frugal, it shows you where it's available. And why is that important in the research part? Not just where to buy it, but companies that might be using something like FIFO to have reviews posted, it's nice reading the reviews from the customers that have bought the product to find out what their experiences are. So, you know, using a couple of those like that is very helpful. And then number 10 is the International Council for Truth in Medicine, and it's found at theictm.org, and they've got a wide range of articles on medical topics that are useful.
So lots of good ones that are all up on infostar.com.
Yep.
Very good. Pete, we've got callers online waiting to join in. Let's go to Mike in Cushing next. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My son-in-law built a computer for me last year, and it worked fine for quite a while, but I've got a very serious virus now, and it just keeps popping up all the time with different stuff. I can't even get into WPR without it kicking out to go in someplace else that doesn't exist. Can I reformat the whole computer and just start over with loading things back in?
Well, here's the thing. You can do that, but you really want to make sure that any of the things that you back up, your data files, have been thoroughly scanned as well to make sure that you're not bringing any, you know, re-injecting the virus onto the system after you've reset it up again. So I usually try to disinfect and get rid of the intrusion on that system before I consider reformatting as an option. So it's just important. You're going to be backing up, I would think, data files from there. Just make sure that those are, you know,
clean.
Are clean so you don't reinfect your system again.
Well, if I go to Windows, I'm Windows 7. Mm-hmm. If I go there, and it brings up a website that doesn't exist and says it can't access it. I can't get into some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just popping stuff up all the time, asking me to sign in and do this and do that. And of course, I can't do that.
Right. What you could do is, if you have access to another computer, is you could download it to a thumb drive, disconnect the computer that's infected from the internet, and try to install and run the antivirus that way. There are some products out there that would allow you to run it in, you can install and run it in the safe mode. Other products that will scan, and then after they run the scan, they'll reboot your system, and then they'll run a root scan to see if there's anything, trying to take control of your system before it even comes up.
Okay. Well, I'll try some of those things, see what I can find out.
Yep.
The key thing is that if you're going to redo it, is just make sure that any of your data files, you put them on a thumb drive or an external hard drive or however you back them up, just make sure they're thoroughly scanned. Scan them on, and you maybe use another computer to scan them. Just make sure that they're clean.
Good luck, Mike. Thank you. Jack in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Jack.
Hi. I've got a question. I updated to Microsoft 10, mm-hmm. Windows 10.
Right.
And now my hotspot, it keeps kicking me off. I get on, and then about 2 minutes later, I'm kicked off. And then I get back on, and it kicks me off again. I was just wondering if it's something to do with Windows 10, or the hotspot doesn't have the right, software in it, or what.
Right. It is possible it could be a Windows 10 issue, because there might be a compatibility problem. The only way to find out for sure is to just do some research on that, because if it wasn't a problem prior to the upgrade, then, it looks like fingers are pointing to it. I mean, if it was working fine before you did the upgrade and now it's, reacting the way you're saying, then it's more than likely the cause of it.
So the thing to do is just go online?
Just go online and see, you know, if other people have had issues with it or if it's been reported.
And be fairly specific in how you write that out.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Or should I go to my hotspot people and see if they've got an upgrade for my hotspot?
You can do that as well.
Maybe both.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully they're talking. I mean, should be talking to each other. Windows 10 has been out for a while. I don't even know what the anniversary date is because they said it was free for a year. I'm sure they'll probably extend that. But, you know,
by this
it's been
time,
out for a while. You would think by this time that it would be something that a known issue and that there's a fix for it.
Yeah. Good luck, Jack. Thank you. John in Dubuque, Iowa, thank you for calling.
Oh, good day. I wonder if you could give me some information regarding a wireless mouse problem. About 2 years ago, I replaced my, I put into service a wireless keyboard and mouse, and it had a little nano receiver that I plugged into the back of my computer, and everything worked fine until day before yesterday when the mouse stopped working. Changed the battery, and that didn't do anything, so I went and I replaced the Logitech mouse with another one equal and the same. And then I found that the pointer worked, but the keyboard didn't. Hmm. When I put the old chip back in, the keyboard worked, but the mouse didn't. I put them in, everything works. I just wondered if I can let it ride that way. There are now two nano receivers in the back of my computer in US ports.
So you've tried both of them in, and one, they don't work when both of them are in?
When both of them in, everything works.
They work then with both. And is it okay to keep both in there?
Yeah, there's no reason why not to. It's just it's occupying, you know, just a USB port on your system. And, you know, typically, you know, USB ports used for wireless mouse, wireless keyboard, if you buy them as a combo, then you only usually use one port.
Yeah.
You might use a cable for hooking up your smartphone or cable for USB for digital camera or webcam. And if you run out of ports, you can buy a USB hub to expand it. So if you've got plenty of extra ports and both those are in there, there's no reason why not to keep it that way.
Yeah. You figured it out, John. You got a fix.
You solved the problem.
You did. Harold in Superior. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I just wanted to mention a very handy program when people are trying to find particular files in their location. It's called, and it has a kind of a simplistic, understated name. It's called Everything. And literally, it does so much more than you'd even guess at first blush. You can look up all your JPEGs or all your music files or MP3s, and you can search only specific kinds of files by doing a selection on it. There's another one that's very similar called File Searchy, and I have them both, but I wouldn't own a computer without this Everything.
So let me ask you a quick question about it.
Sure.
Does it allow you to search just what's in the file name or in the actual contents of the file?
No, it doesn't do content. Okay. Contents. And, you know, frankly, I'm not even sure if File Searchy does. I just use that rarely. But what it's doing is it indexes your entire drive, and it doesn't take long at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've had it in my boot up, so it was already indexed when my computer came on, and I didn't notice that much of a lapse. But what it's doing is it is grabbing all of these files from file allocation table.
Right.
So it's 100%, and it's instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And one example I use a great deal, you know, our computers get so cluttered up with useless files. And when I download something, as I'm downloading it, I open up everything. I type in the file, that name of the file that I'm downloading, and now I've found the directory where the old ones download. You know, I might have three old versions of it.
Yeah.
Right.
In the download directory, I delete those, mm-hmm. and then I click on this one, and I say run it.
Right.
All in one operation. Mm-hmm. Oh, is that handy?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, so handy. If I may just mention a couple of others very quickly. I use and have for about 7 years now, I used Advanced System Care from IOBIT, and they have a whole host of top-rated utilities, defrag and uninstallers, and they're just wonderful and just underpriced, in my opinion, as far as, you know, it's under $20, maybe $15, $10 sometimes, and they get better every 6 months. I can go back and say, if you tried it 6 months ago, you got to try it today. They keep improving it. Mm-hmm. And the other one I really use for information management is called All My Notes. And another somewhat odd name maybe, but they're wonderful people that have put this program together. And it's a kind of a tree-style outliner, so you can have your category and then subfolders and sub things, just so you can browse it. And I have recipes in one, and medical in another, mm-hmm. and then, you know, one is my general for just about everything else. And you know,
works great.
Specialized ones, yep. But it's been great. And I have TreePad as well, and that's a good, very powerful program, but almost more than one needs, and that one's $35. So.
Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thanks. That's that is really cool, and especially for me, that everything sounds sounds like a pretty cool program. Thanks, Harold. Appreciate the call very much. I want to give Jim in Northeast Wisconsin a chance to join us too. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello there. Just general comments. I always wait for the show to come on because I'm always learning something. I wanted to just general comments. I use CCleaner from Pureforms.
Yep.
And I'm very, very satisfied with them. I even sent them money, which is pretty, should be high praise because it's well worth it. Mm-hmm. I know the free works, but you know, I have it running all the time, so mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about things hanging in the browsers after I close out, or I know for sure what I do save for cookies are just fine. So I'll let that stand on its own. I'm a proponent of CCleaner and that company. I've always run into a problem with backups are always kind of a scary thing, right? Because you hope they'll always work for you. You do them, and then when the time comes, if you have to really use them, what happens? So I don't know if others have seen it, but I have been using program called Free File Sync. I don't know if you've heard of it, for doing kind of just general backups to an external drive. It's not really a backup, but I select what I want to have the latest version pushed to it, so it does a check. Mm-hmm. Do I have a newer file? Then it pushes it.
Right.
And that's my way of hopefully protecting my pictures and things mm-hmm. until
Free
I
Files. Is it
backup.
Free Files?
Free File.
Free File Sync. S-Y-N-C.
Yep.
Oh, S-Y-N-C. Yeah.
Thing Windows 10 has brought back is they have a backup that you can run through the operating system, and they maintain versions of the backups as well.
I haven't really learned enough about Windows 10. I'm using it, but you know, I'm not still learning like all of us. I also wanted to comment on building a PC. I do have some electronics background, so I've built a few in my life, and I still enjoy the challenge, but I surely don't recommend it for someone unless they're really ready to walk into
yeah, that's know, the way I feel about it.
When I turn it.
Yeah. I've grown out of that is the way I look at it.
Yeah, I'm reverting to my second childhood, so I'm actually thinking about it again. So,
And no comment.
Okay, nobody's mentioned anything about protecting passwords. That may not be the focus of this call, but I've settled on KeePass as a password locker, mm-hmm. and that one has a number of extensions to iPhone and Android phones, right? So you can actually sync that password database to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you have any comments on that. I guess that's my biggest question. I store that encrypted file up in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
and I have a passphrase that's probably fairly long. You know, I mean, it's unlikely anyone's going to guess it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I use to make sure I can keep my password strong and then also distribute them out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it. Just little comments, because yep. I hear things being said and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
well, those are all good comments, Jim. Yep. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks.
You're
good luck
welcome.
With building your next computer.
Yeah, that's something I would never have the skill to begin with, but it's, you know, you can buy computers now.
I'm just going to say, been there, done that.
Pretty reasonably. I understand the allure for some who, you know, might want to fool around with it, but, man, I don't think I'm ready for that. And never will be, as a matter of fact. We have, actually, Tony in Green Bay has problems with a spinning wheel on his Mac desktop. Whenever he tries to open an application, he has 21 icons for applications he uses often on his desktop. Doesn't go away quickly. How do you get that spinning wheel to...
I'm wondering if he has problems with drive space.
That could be.
21 applications, you know, if the operating system's up to date, not necessarily El Capitan, but, you know, if you've got enough drive space, sometimes that becomes an issue where things take a long time on a Mac.
Yeah, that could be it. That could be it. And you know what? We're pretty much out of time here, Pete, mm-hmm. and... Can you weigh in on a good program for doing taxes on the computer?
Well, I used to, you know, I tried one every year to be different, and I've done the online stuff. I personally use TurboTax, and I have for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty straightforward. They have a lot of different, you know, options for the simple stuff all the way through business and home. The other ones probably work just as well. Why did I settle on that?
Does it work well?
It works well. It was the last one I probably used and decided, you know, I'm just going to stick with it because they all seem the same. My personal view on that is I think if the government wants us to pay taxes, they should be providing the software because we're doing all the work. That's just the way I look at it. I really think fair is fair. You know, they don't have to key it in if I send them an electronic file, so...
Yeah, I've used TurboTax too with good success. I have nothing to complain about.
The other ones work too.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. He'll be back and we'll talk with him again. Tomorrow at this time, we'll explore some of the lesser known aspects of that first year of retirement. That is at 11 o'clock today. There are some issues that first year. Oftentimes, there's some depression involved, among other things. So we'll learn some more about that tomorrow. Stay with us.